Amateur Traveler, Episode 89. Today the Amateur Traveler goes to the Galapagos Islands.
I got my bags packed on a roll. I'm heading out there and I'm ready to go. I'm looking real good in my passport photo.
Oh no.
15-hour flight, oh, I don't think I'll ever be coming home. You know I love it. I got to see one more cathedral.
Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. I have two news stories for you today. The first one comes in one of those It's About Time categories. The Department of Transportation may target airlines for unrealistic flight schedules. According to USA Today, the feds may be ready to battle with U.S. airlines over chronically late flights and unrealistic flight schedules. Apparently, as many as 8 airlines could be fined for failing to provide accurate flight delay information and for publishing unrealistic flight schedules. There's something that I think all flyers will benefit from. The second thing I have today for you is something that's going to help you and maybe help me at the same time. There's a contest that has been created just for those of you who listen to podcasts.
Hi, my name is Greg.
And my name is Tanya, and we're from the family-friendly podcast Dancing with Elephants.
And we would like to pose a question to you. How would you like a chance at winning an Apple iPod Shuffle by simply writing a review for the podcast that you are listening to right now?
That's right. Simply writing a 20 words or more review for this podcast, the one that you're plugged into right now, can get you a chance at winning an iPod Shuffle. We're calling it the Let Them Hear You contest, and it's a chance for you to send feedback to the podcaster.
All you have to do is go to any podcast directory, such as iTunes, Podcast Alley, or Podcast Pickle, and write a 20-word review for this podcast and any other podcast that you fancy. Just make sure that the final 3 words in your review are the capital letter R, the capital letter U, and the word listening followed by a question mark. So it reads as, are you listening? Oh, and those 3 words count towards your total, so now you only need 17 more.
Then send the name of the podcast you reviewed, a copy of your review, the podcast directory containing your review, and your username, if applicable, to dwecontest@gmail.com.
Entries must be received no later than Friday, May 11th, at 11:59 p.m. U.S. Central Time. For every legitimate review you submit, you'll get 1 entry into the drawing.
So the more reviews you write, the better your chances of winning.
Winners will be drawn from the legitimate entries. The runner-up prize includes CDs from 3 Blind Mice and Jonathan Colton. The grand prize includes those CDs, plus seasons 1 through 4 of The Radio Ventures of Dr. Floyd, a 1-year membership to the Dr. Floyd Imagination Nation Rangers, and an Apple iPod Shuffle.
You subscribe to the podcast. You listen to the podcast. You like the podcast. Why not let the producer of the podcast know just how much you appreciate the work they're doing? And maybe, just maybe, you'll walk away with an Apple iPod Shuffle for your efforts.
For a complete set of rules, visit the Dancing with Elephants website at dwithe.com. That's dwithe.com.
The Let Them Hear You contest is sponsored by Dancing with Elephants, with help from The Radio Adventures of Dr. Floyd. Visit them at www.drfloyd.com. That's www.docterfloyd.com.
I'd like to welcome to the show Richard. And Richard actually is a friend of Adam, who was on the show previously. And Adam recommended Richard when I was looking for someone to talk about the Galapagos Islands. Richard, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm pleased to be here. Thank you for having me.
So you went to the Galapagos Islands when, first of all?
I went on April 12th this year, 2007, and I returned on April 22nd.
And they're not the most easy place to get to, so why the Galapagos?
Well, it's kind of a complicated answer. I've been wanting to go there, but probably that's the first reason for many years. I like going to exotic places. It's hard to get to. It's been hard to get to for human beings for thousands of years, and I knew that. I'm interested in our species, and there's been a lot of study about human beings and evolution done with respect to the Galapagos Islands, starting with Charles Darwin, so that always interested me ever since I was in college. Also, I think right now our global warming and climate change has kind of gave me a little kick in the pants to try to get the trip done this time, because I've understood that climate change has affected those islands a lot. My wife is interested in birding, and there's a lot of unusual birds there, or if they aren't unusual, a lot of birds nest there or hatch there. Those are the main things. It's nature travel. I don't usually do nature travel, although I live in California and I go to Yosemite a lot, which is a kind of nature travel. I haven't done any international nature travel.
Okay. And let's set the stage for people who haven't looked into doing this trip. This is not one of those trips where you go and you hang out at a resort, for sure.
Oh, definitely not. Definitely not. You're on the move every day, almost all day, actually. Either you're walking or you're in a pontoon boat or the ship you're on is moving.
And you say the ship you're on, you don't actually stay on the islands.
Not most of the time.
Not actually, most of the time.
First
okay.
night, the first night, there is a large island, and there is a settlement there of about 30,000 people on this one large island. And there is a hotel. Actually, there's several hotels, which I understood from tour books before I went. But we stayed at a kind of a more remote hotel on that island for one night. And then we went to the boat, and we're on the boat the rest of the time.
Okay. And there's a couple different styles of boats. Were you on one of the larger boats or one of the real small boats, or which trip did you go on?
Hey, very good. We were on the smallest possible boat we could go on.
Okay.
We knew that fact that you just mentioned before we went, and we investigated for a couple of years before picking how we did it. And we were on one of the smallest boats. There were only 13 people, although I think they could have taken 16, but there were only 13 people on our boat. And
on
we
the
saw
boat,
other
right.
boats that were larger.
You were actually staying on this boat most of the time?
Yes, except for the one night, right.
Okay. And what tour line were you with, or what tour group were you with?
Okay, a very, very important point. It was called Inca Tours, and or Inca Floats, I think the real name for it now. They started running trips to, I guess, Machu Picchu, Peru, but they specialized in this, and I guess they're the oldest ones who've been doing it, and they just have it down to a T. And the tour guide that they picked was, actually, we had one tour guide when we were that day on land and a different tour guide on the boat. They're both of them naturalists, and they were very, very excellent. And I don't know if this is the time to be talking about that aspect of choosing a trip. But
we'll get there in just a second, but hold that thought. And the last question I had, sort of setting the scene, is we haven't mentioned what country the Galapagos are in. You're flying through Quito in Ecuador, right?
Ecuador, yes. We flew from San Francisco to Miami. I changed planes in Miami and flew direct Miami, Quito, which is the capital, a 9,000-foot-high city.
Right.
Then we flew from Quito to Baltra, is the name of the island that has an airport on it. And then Baltra is so small and only has a small airport, although it can take jets. It was like a 727-type jet. We took a little ferry over to the island where it's populated.
Okay.
Like maybe a ferry of, you know, that was like a three-minute ferry, that type of.
Oh, okay. All right. And what was the highlight of the trip? As you look back on it, what stands out?
Well, I would say various different things regarding the animals. I guess the main thing about the animals is how tame they are. It's hard to believe, and it's hard to explain to people how tame wild animals are. Birds, reptiles, sea lions. You can just walk next to a mother with a chick that was born that day, and she wouldn't be frightened of you. And same with sea lions and their babies. The park is very restricted about where you walk and how you do that. And you're with your tour guides are all licensed rangers of the island for the national park there. But nevertheless, you can walk, and you do walk right near these animals. And it was a very spiritual experience to do that for 10 days. It was really astounding. I can digress a little bit. Charles Darwin wrote in a book called Voyage of the Beagle, which is a diary when he went there. Although he was going around the world, he spent some time there, and about 20 pages of the book is he talks about how tame they are, and our naturalist said they've become even less tame than that time. And he talks about how in 1835 they were a little less tame than they were the first visitors to diaries he's read, Europeans, in the late 1600s. So that very much stood out to me. An aspect of that is we went snorkeling one day and a bunch of baby sea lions came, I would say about 15 of them, came and just thought it would be neat to play with. And they just swam among us as we swam. So that was just quite a surprise and quite enchanting, just magical place, very interesting.
Huh. Did the naturalist comment, is that something that's common?
With that particular experience, he says it does happen. I don't think he would say it was common.
Okay.
There are loads of sea lions over the islands where we were. So it's conceivable. I think what made it happen was where it happened. We were snorkeling at a place where they were also hanging out that particular day. We certainly weren't the first people. I don't think it's a rare thing, but I don't think it happens in every trip, the way he described it.
And in 10 days, I assume you're going around to a number of different islands in this chain.
Yes, the chain has, I think, 12 islands, and we went to 8 of them, or 11 islands, maybe, went to 8 of them. That's another aspect of this tour group, is that they make sure you get to some of the islands that the other tour groups don't go to. And one of the things is that our naturalist is the ranger that gives the time tickets to each tour. So he knows where the other tours are because he's the scheduler for the national park.
Oh, okay.
The Inca tour uses as their naturalist because that's his job also. Both the time of the day, the islands that we went to were somewhat enhanced because of that other job that he has.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been working for this company for 20 years.
What was the biggest surprise that you had for this trip? You'd been planning for it for 2 years, you said. So
yeah.
You must have known everything that was going to happen.
I would say researching it. Yeah.
Researching it, sure.
The biggest surprise, Well, I guess I was surprised by the animals. There's a movie called Master and Commander, which made it
sure.
a little
mm-hmm.
more popular place right now. And I was surprised by, you know, I get the impression and from reading that there's just all these rare animals, and I kind of thought that they'd be very, you know, you'd have to kind of look for them, you know, something like that. But they're everywhere. They're everywhere. That was a bit of a surprise.
And you talked about...
Of course, that's a delightful surprise. That's not a... Some people call it disappointing things that are a surprise, but that was a delightful surprise.
Sure. You talked about animals everywhere. Besides swimming with baby sea lions, anything else stand out in terms of any particular animal encounter?
I wouldn't say it's an encounter. Oh, yes, I would. Well, first I should say that the most interesting animal to me was the albatross. The albatross mm-hmm. fly all over the world, and they have a huge wingspan.
Right.
They're on every continent, but they're gliders, and they don't land anywhere. Sometimes they go on water. They don't land anywhere except in this one island in Galapagos.
Huh.
They have almost like runways that they've tramped down from their landing. And we happened to be there when a lot of them were coming back. It's a mating period, which would go on for maybe a month or 6 weeks, but... So they're coming back, meeting their same mate, for which they've had for 40 years of their life, and who may have been somewhere else in the world, and they have to glide in because they have such a wide wingspan. They don't have strength of their wings for landing or taking off. They just have her for being in the air and catching currents, and they sleep flying. And so watching them try to land, and many of them not landing and changing their mind, waiting for the right wind direction, and then watching them take off, also, they waddle over to the edge of the cliff because they can't get any speed, and they wait for an updraft, and then they drop off and then fly away with the updraft. And to think of how that species could have evolved to do that is just it's just so astounding. That was very impressive to me also. Another encounter that I had, you may know from other kinds of mammals of this type, sea lions, males have a harem of women, females, I should say, and they have maybe 10 or 12 or 15 females, and then they dominate and they fight off the other bull. But there's also a bachelor pad on one of the islands where they go. So walking through the bachelor pad, they're not friendly with each other necessarily, but they are more respectful than when they're on the beach challenging another bull. And it was very interesting to see them all there. And I didn't do this, but one of the people in my group was taking a picture up a little too close. And like a guy who had not had sex for a while, he barked very surprisingly at this guy, and he fell over backwards. He was so surprised. We were all very surprised because usually they aren't that. Usually none of the animals that we'd experienced, and this was the last day of the trip, had that much hostility towards anybody. Frustrated male, though.
Yeah. I'm trying to avoid saying I know just how he feels, but you'd done research and such for this trip. And was there anything that the guidebooks recommend that you found a little disappointing?
The guidebooks really didn't give the most essential fact, and I feel, which is that you need to have a guide that speaks English if you're from the United States or from an English-speaking country. Both of our guides, the one that was the one day on land and the one on the boat, are native English speakers. even though they're both Ecuadorian citizens, and one of them actually is several generations there, but they're native English speakers. The rapport that you get, that you can talk to in the evening or at lunch or at meals or just hanging out, is very, very important. When we saw when we were on the trip, other groups that might have been like an hour behind us, but we crisscrossed with them. And I could see that the people, most of them North Americans or some Europeans, they had an Ecuadorian who, you know, is maybe a PhD even, or, you know, a very well-educated person, I'm sure, and know the islands very well. But their native language was not English, and they were lecturing in English to them and pointing things out to them in English. So you naturally would be less inclined to ask the same kind of questions. The guidebooks had no hint of that significant point about how to tour the islands.
Did you interact then with other groups while you were there, or are you pretty much just with 12 people all week?
No, not really. It was just that I think I mentioned or referred to the fact they have passes when you can be on any given island.
Sure.
And then some of the islands are large enough so that there might be another group at on the island at the same time you're there, or maybe just arriving when you're leaving. Mm-hmm. So there was some little bit of interaction, and we were all curious, how's your trip going? How's
sure,
your boat?
I would think
that
so.
Kind of, what do you think of your guide? That kind of thing. We saw, I would say, maybe four other groups that we could talk to. Although in the harbors of each island, there usually was another boat anchored, or maybe two. Although some islands, there was no one else. I would say two or three of the islands, there was no one else at all. They were pretty small, and they were more remote, but they were very worth going to.
It's interesting. I seem to get almost two separate impressions. One is that you're with 12 people a whole lot for 10 days, and then the other is that it's more solitary, that you're interacting a little with other groups, but you're very much out away from the populated areas. Is that a correct impression?
Yeah. That's a correct impression. You're with your 13 people and the crew. There's a crew of 9 on this boat.
Okay, all right.
So the crew doesn't go on shore with you, but they do take in the pontoons. They're very important. Well, another issue that I guess the guidebook doesn't say is that being with a small boat allows you to board and disembark very quickly from your boat and from where you're going on the island. You know, even if you're just slightly larger, you know, you're in 20 or 25, and that would be considered a relatively small boat. There is some degree of waiting, but there was virtually no waiting for anything that we did.
And we should point out, when we say large boats in the Galapagos, we're not talking Freedom of the Seas, 5,000 passengers.
No, but we did see a 100-boat, 100-person passenger.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I don't think they would allow a big cruise.
No, that's my impression as well. Okay. What do you wish you had known before you went?
What do I wish I had known? Well, I wouldn't have brought the wetsuit because it was warmer there, and I didn't need it. And I bought a wetsuit to go snorkeling, but I kept it packed up and didn't need it.
You're pretty much on the equator here.
You're on the equator, but it can be cold in the water. It's a rainy and a dry season, and there are two seasons. There are currents there which come up from Antarctica. So the guidebook did say that at this time of year it could be getting colder. It's warmest in January and February, I guess, in the water, but it could be getting colder. I might have that reversed. I forget. We're on kind of the edge of the season, but various websites suggest this time of year the water is too cool to swim in. But on the other hand, it could be climate change. You know, you can't keep up with this kind of thing. There's a lot of climate change, as we all know, occurring now in various ways, and this is a very sensitive environment. But definitely it's affected by currents. We crossed the equator 4 times because the islands straddle the equator, but it was not what one in North America would think of as equatorial weather at all. It was cool, very cool at night. You had to wear a fleece jacket at night on the deck. And I would say it got down to the high 30s or low 40s.
Oh, my. Wow. Okay.
And also when the sun sets, it starts to cool down. And even during the day until about 11 or 12, it's still just warming up, you know, until the real heat of the day. And then the heat of the day, it might be in the 80s or low 90s at this time of year. Very hot. Of course, everybody warns you about this. They're very, very direct sun, and you need to be covered.
Sure. Was there any particular reason you planned for April? You said it was a kind of a change in between the wet and the dry season.
Well, it's a little cheaper than
it's a shoulder season then. Okay.
It had more to do with our personal schedules. No, it had more to do with our personal schedules.
Okay.
I think if we went with another couple, college friends, who had wanted to do this also, and we knew that, and they do a lot of traveling also. But we haven't traveled with them before, but we did. We've been talking for several years and then began focusing on it more in the last couple of years, that we wanted to do it together. And so with four professional people's schedules, it's hard to get their same week together or 10 days together. And so I think it had more to do with that than almost anything.
Okay. Did you do side trips as you were coming in and out of the Galapagos?
No, that's a good question. That was definitely offered, and some of the people on our boat did. You can do what's called a Highlands Galapagos add-on. Uh-huh. We didn't, except only on one island, which was one of the smaller islands that we were on, you can go up to the volcanic peaks, and it's some rainforest on some of the larger islands. And I think four of the people, they were in a group together themselves too, were there 4 days earlier to do that add-on. And then joined our trip, which was the plan. Then one other person did, I think, 4 days in the Amazon jungle in Ecuador right after our trip. So flew back to Quito with us and then continued on with the same tour company. And, of course, the Inca, they want us to add on almost to double the price to go on their Machu Picchu trip. So since we're down there, why don't we do that? But we'll do that another occasion.
Okay. Excellent. Anything else we should add as we wrap this up? It sounds like you had a good trip and would recommend it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I don't think it's the kind of place you'd go to many times. But
sure.
It was a wonderful trip. I'd highly recommend that everyone get a chance to go there. And I don't know that it's going to be as pristine as it has been, and I'm sure it wasn't as pristine for us either as it maybe would have been 10 years ago. And I had a work colleague, actually, who went about 10 years ago. The guide said that there was a 200% increase between 2005 and 2007.
In the number people of going to the Galapagos?
Yeah, 200% increase.
Well, and as we talked about offline, my wife and I are thinking about going next year or possibly even having a trip for amateur traveler listeners, so we'll see whether that comes together or not.
Nice.
Well, Richard, thanks so much for coming on the show and telling us about your adventures in the Galapagos Islands. I have this picture of you swimming with baby seals that seems indelibly etched as an interesting opportunity there.
Yes, it was. they dive deeper than me, than I do, but that was fun.
Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you very much.
The first resource I have for you in the Internet Resources portion of the show is an article on the 5 secrets for traveling with teenagers. The 5 secrets are itinerary compromise, let them decide what to pack, maintaining contact with friends, entertainment, and give teenagers as much freedom as possible. I'll put a link to that article that comes from the Exit Row Seat blog. The trip we talked about today is not an inexpensive one. If you'd like a bargain cruise instead, I'm going to put a link in the show notes to an article from about.com on 5 chances at a bargain cruise that tell you different techniques for finding a good price. The other link I'm going to put up is a link for how to find or create a meetup group for travel. Meetup.com is a site that I'm a member of and belong to a couple podcasters groups. I would certainly belong to a travel group in San Jose if such a thing existed, but someone hasn't created one yet. But you can check to see if there's a group in your area where you can learn from other people's travel experience or maybe even find some travel partners. For those of you who have been thinking about subscribing to the podcast, that is, telling a program to look for the podcast every week because you don't want to miss out on some of the upcoming shows, we have shows coming up on Baja California, on Brazil, Ireland, Andalusia in southern Spain, living as a exchange student in Italy, Greece, Mexico, Nicaragua, all sorts of things coming up. And if you don't want to miss any of those, you can subscribe to it, and the best tutorial I've seen so far is at learntosubscribe.com, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes. It's a video tutorial of how to subscribe to a podcast using common programs like iTunes, which runs on both Windows and Mac, or a couple other programs like that. Not a lot of news in the community this week. I did hear from Francine, who is planning a trip to New Zealand. I don't have any guests scheduled for New Zealand, so if you have some good travel stories about New Zealand and some good travel tips, give me a ring. Either call the comment line at 206-MOM-LOVE or drop me an email at host@amateurtraveler.com. You can always leave comments on the discussion boards as well. If you're looking in stalking me, I can make that easier for you. I've also just started using both Twitter at twitter.com and Jaiku, Jaiku.com. And both of those are sort of microbloggers where you answer the question of what you're doing right now. So when I start editing shows, for instance, or I'm about to post that, I will tend to post on both of those services. My account name for both is Chris2X, which is my account name most every place. I'm supposed to be interviewed for a travel blog on Monday. I'll let you know if that comes out. And as always, thanks so much for listening.
I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more cafe. I know that I should be heading home, but maybe not today. The best and the brightest, served up daily by the sharpest minds in content delivery, Podshow and Limelight.